NFL Show, part of the Mojo Sports Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to a brand new week of the AFL Show here on Mojo Sports. My name is Yuri Bilcic, and what a gather round we had in round four, right, where all 18 teams converged onto South Australia to play in what was a sort of a week full of sort of controversy, if you want to use that term, but other games which absolutely went down to the wire. And joining me this evening are Ash and Alan to break it all down. Welcome, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me again. That was a pretty good gather around for sure.
So yeah. I'll ask you first too, Alan. What was your biggest sort of breakaways or takeaways, should I say, as well, with gather around and sort of what you learned from it?
Well, it's really taken off in Adelaide. I think one of the highlights would have been sort of that Richmond St Kilda game that had the festival outside the ground. So there was a whole heap of fans around. So it's a real football feel, and definitely the whole sort of place was going around. You can see a whole heap of fans driving across the whole country. People out from Darwin making the trip down. So it's definitely getting a lot of traction, which is great to see.
What about for you, Ash?
Yeah, well, I think seeing the media talk about it the last couple of years, and sort of all my mates going, and it gives me a bit of FOMO because I know next year I definitely want to check it out. So I think it's great for the game, it's great for the league, and it's really great for the states outside of Victoria. So happy for Adelaide, and yeah, it's good for footy.
So we'll touch on quickly too, because we have to get through the previews for round five as well. But just some of the news points as well during the week as well. I think if you want to touch on one of them too as well, with what happened with Fremantle Carlton, and a lot of people sort of touched upon James Asher's sort of that brush ball as well, which George Hewitt kicked and brushed James Asher's sort of tricep on the way through to Matt Cottrell. But there's all been more discussions about in terms of just whether there should be a captain's challenge right within the AFL. And we've seen so many rule changes over the last decade, which has sort of altered around sort of the concept of the game. But what did both of you make of it?
Well, for me, generally, I'm against rule changes in the AFL because over the last few years, they make rule changes for like the drop of the hat or too many. But I sort of come from a different perspective here because I have a hockey background, and this has been in hockey since 2009, where they have actual captain's challenges for inside attacking circle, which would be akin to the attacking 50. And that's generally worked quite well. They're there, they have just one challenge, and if it's successful, they continue and they can have more challenges throughout the game. If it's incorrect and they can't challenge it properly, then it's chucked out. And generally, with it, it goes pretty well. There was a couple of instances through like probably the Olympics last year, last Olympics in Tokyo, where there was like one instance that went like over 4 minutes long, but generally they're decided within 10, 20 seconds kind of thing. So the AFL could probably bring one in where it's like cut at like 30 seconds and that wouldn't slow the game down too much. But in terms of it would, you know, stop some of the incorrect decisions, because when you actually look at something like free kicks, there's 37 free kicks in a game, but umpires are making what, 10 decisions each minute on average. So that's 1,200 decisions. So they're going to get a lot of decisions wrong. And this will probably impact some of it, but they just have to be able to, if they're going to implement it, get that timing correct, because you do not want ones that go for 4 minutes too long. But I definitely think it's something I should consider bringing in.
Yeah, I think that's one thing too that we've seen, especially the first month of this season, Alan, and sort of the number of delays we've seen with goal umpire referrals, and sort of really left a lot of supporters scratching their heads and why we should be having these sort of long delays too, when I think even talks in recent seasons as well about reducing the game from 120 minutes down to 100, which I think is just completely absurd. But Ash, what do you think of this concept if it does potentially go ahead?
Yeah, I agree with what Alan said, and I think as a big basketball fan, you know, you've seen it work pretty well in the NBA. In the NBL, they've introduced it sort of more recently. But if you want to sort of not have it take up as much time or save it for the big moments, and if you sort of restrict it to the fourth quarter only or the final 10 minutes of the fourth quarter, when you sort of know that one decision either way is going to make a big difference, then I'm all for it. And I don't think many people will really have an issue with it. Sort of same as reviewing the goals from the goal umpire. If you're going to make the right decision, you'd rather take a bit extra time rather than have seen this sort of half-half and make the wrong call. So yeah, I'm for it. I don't really see much wrong that can go with it, especially if you're just restricting to the fourth quarter or final few minutes.
Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a feeling too that the players would quite accept in the last few minutes too, especially if they're fatiguing a lot. Extra break as well would be quite handy for them. But and when it comes to decisions, though, you generally want to make it correct, I feel.
Yeah, I think we've seen with cricket, right, with the DRS and how that came into effect back in 2010, where teams used to have three reviews, then got reduced to two. Now it's back up to three, and how that sort of changed the dynamics, especially within Test cricket too, where ODIs you only have one referral, and I'm pretty sure that's it. So we'll just touch on one more thing as well, and it was during the Collingwood Hawthorn game, because we'll get to the previews for round five very shortly as well. And there was one particular move that Hawthorn made against Collingwood after half time. They were trailing by 38 points, and that was the adjustment of shifting Blake Hardwick playing up forward. And it was already noted during the preseason that he was going to play as a forward. But what did both of you sort of make of Blake's move and Coach Sam Mitchell's sort of good adjustment too, to really sort of provide this sort of spark as well to Hawthorn's small forward brigade stocks, considering they were without Luke Bruce and Nick Watson?
For me, he just knows how to use his body well. And that's the one thing I think the sort of Hawthorn sort of lacked initially. And he's sort of almost attacked it like a defender, that back roll. And the Collingwood couldn't quite, he's sort of able to hold off back. He was able to mark up off the back, push the opponent underneath the ball. And that seemed to be sort of a trick. And the Collingwood didn't really know what to do, but it was quite an astute move. And I know he definitely had been training there over the summer and it had been flagged. But they actually come off quite well, though. So.
Ash, your thoughts?
No, I think Alan summarised it pretty well. He's a very experienced player, Hardwick, and to provide four goals in a short period of time like that certainly brought the game much closer and much more interesting for mutuals. So, yeah, I think Collingwood, sort of despite winning, wouldn't be too happy with their performance, especially with sort of some of the more experienced guys just sort of falling off, these four, first couple rounds of the year, and sort of their big stars as well not performing as well. So yeah, good on Blake Hardwick and good on Sam Mitchell.
Now, I think it's going to be an interesting concept to see what happens on Saturday night too, with him and Dylan Moore up four too, with Nick Watson still out for another 5 weeks with that rolled ankle. And of course, Luke Bruce won't make the trip up to Carrara as well. That was announced about a day ago with that ongoing groin injury. There's another point too as well with Port Adelaide Essendon, and it was pretty emphatic after probably midway through that second quarter where the power just completely got on top. But it was two particular Port Adelaide midfielders that just completely chopped Essendon apart. Jason Horne-Francis and Connor Rozee. Rozee's 36 disposals and 3 goals, and Horne-Francis had 31 touches. I think it was about 10 clearances and 625 metres gained. And those two were just so prolific right throughout the contest as well. Just what do you think about their whole midfield brigade as well at Port Adelaide, the young nucleus that they've got, and where do you think it sort of really stacks up amongst some of the other elite midfields in the game?
For me, it's for them that for them they're just really attacking. So they're all goal kicking mids. Think about Butters, Rosie, and now Horne-Francis. They all have the ability to burst from a stoppage, clear 50, and kick, but also rest forward and also play as an extra forward. That's something that no other team actually has. They might have clearance space. Think of a Cripps. You think of sort of Tom Green. So yes, they're going to dominate in the midfield, and they're probably going better, probably contested than what Port Adelaide are. But on the outside, Port Adelaide are going to be far more damaging. And that's if they can get the clearances sort of on their path. So, break even with the opposition, they're going to be more damaging. You saw that with the scores from stoppages they were able to do against Essendon. They just can take teams apart.
Ash, your thoughts on this, or do you want to move on to another topic?
No, I agree with Alan, and I think that's also where someone like Willem Drew complements support midfield really well. So with that defensive mindset, but yeah, I know sort of from a current fan, I can't wait for Sam Walsh to get back out there. So the comparisons between him and Rosie and Butters sort of, I've got a bit more of a case on my side.
Yeah, that's sort of been a whole lingering conversation from one particular person about this for at least probably the best part of 6 years, right? Since both of them were drafted in the same draft back in 2018, with Rosie at pick five and Walsh, of course, going number one overall back in that year. I think there's probably one more point before we do turn our attention to previewing the 8 games for round five in that regard too. And it's probably more the fact Geelong's 4-0 start as well. It's the first 4-0 start since 2017. And after missing finals for, I think it was only the second time in the last 9 years. The other time was back in 2015 when they lost their final round game to Collingwood, should I say, which had major implications for them missing out on finals that year. Are you guys surprised that they're 4-0, or do you think it's not really considering the whole culture that they've built over nearly 2 decades?
A little surprised, but also at the same time not. I don't think they've been fantastic in all their wins, but just their system is so good that they can overcome and hinder any opposition. And that sort of system is allowing them to be in games, and then just natural talent through Jeremy Cameron's game on the weekend was fantastic. That's almost a way able to get them over the line. But you can definitely see them being another, top eight team again this year. But you got to give credit to Chris Scott and the whole coaching team, though. They just produce every single season.
Ash, your takeaways early
Yeah,
on for the Cats?
for as long as I can remember, Geelong have always been the team. So you can never underestimate because they're always up there. No matter how often you say they're too old, too slow, they always find a way to get back into contention, whether it's for finals or the premiership. And I think sort of Dangerfield coming back soon is going to add another element to their mid forward mix. So it's really exciting for them. I'm sure they'll be pushing for another sort of finals charge late in the careers of some of the older boys at the club.
Ash, I'll throw one to you as well, because Jacob Wertering, of course, has been back for the last couple of weeks as well after tearing his calf during the preseason as well. I think all Carlton fans initially feared that he might miss probably a couple of months of the season, but he's returned fit and firing too, and has really, of course, been that real Marshall General, of course, anyway, of Carlton's back six. But what within the whole sort of scheme as well with Wertering do you think has sort of really helped gel the Blues, especially probably in the last 18 months, right, since his big turnaround?
Yeah, it looks interesting because Carlton, sort of with their key defenders, ever since Liam Jones left to the Dogs, they've been trying a lot of different options: Brodie Kemp, Lewis Young, Caleb Marchbank, Mitch McGovern, and they've never really sort of been able to find the perfect mix. But the one constant there is Jacob Wertering, and he's always stood out, and he's always been the one to save Carlton. So he's been there since the beginning, since Carlton were really, really bad, sort of in the mid 2010s. And he's courageous. He knows how to defend, but he also knows how to attack and intercept. So he's really the perfect package. And not to mention, he's just a great leader. He's courageous. He knows how to control the back line and sort of tell everyone where they need to go. And, I'm sure he'll be the perfect captain replacement for Paddy Cripps when he eventually steps down.
So if you're looking at Carlton's sort of tall backline stocks too, Ash, and you mentioned Lewis Young, and of course when I think Wertering had that injury as well, missed 6 weeks that shoulder against Collingwood back in round 11 a couple of years ago, and Lewis Young filled that void there for 6 weeks and did a really admirable job. And I think that was probably Youngie's best year and probably a career best season for him too. Do you look at either him and Wertering? Do you look at Wertering or Marchbank as we saw against North Melbourne? Or do you look at Wertering and Kemp as those two main tall defenders?
It's interesting. Marchbank sort of he's always got some sort of injury issue, but whenever he's fit and available, Voss always selects him, and that's something which has been quite noticeable since Vossie came into the head coaching role. For me, I think Lewis Young is a player who personally I don't like much at all. He seems very unsure of himself. He is very sort of hard to describe. He just has no footy IQ. You'll always see him spoiling when he can be marking. You'll always see him taking the wrong option by foot, long down the line, and there's a clear sort of inboard kick on the 45. And he's just a very frustrating player to watch. It's hard to know whether it's something to do with, skills. Obviously, like you mentioned, when Reedering was injured with that shoulder a couple of years ago, he really took a big step forward. So it's hard to see if it's skills or confidence or what it is, but sort of him and even Brodie Kemp is a little bit of the same, just lacking a bit of something. So it's hard to know exactly, but I mean, for Carlton's sake, you really hope they can sort of figure it out. But if they don't, they've got a lot of options there to sort of experiment with, get it right before finals.
I think it's been a big thing with Carlton for a number of years too, Ash, and especially I think during the early 2000s as well, the late 90s, they never really had a sort of a tall back line apart from Silvani there and when Peter Dean was there, and it was Silvani and Glenn Mantle who played way beyond his height. That's why they had Ange Christou there, of course, that sweeping half back. It was a very sort of short back line. And even during the early 2010s, as you mentioned too, Michael Jamieson, then that to put Lachie Henderson down back when Jamieson hurt his knee, I think in a West Coast game in 2011, and they sort of had. They haven't had that sort of super tall backline as well. It was Jamieson and Henderson. And I think at various times as well as Jamieson, Jordan Russell. And then, of course, had Jeremy Laidler playing as the third tall, which probably never was quite in his repertoire. So it's been that sort of trend for a long period of time at Carlton. We've sort of not having the most tallest backline. But as we've seen, right, for the last 18 months, they've got the job done. So we'll turn our attention now to the eight games of round five as well. Can't believe it's already a month into the season, just how quickly every season we've seen the talk goes really fast. That's probably a cliche and pun, but it's true. So we'll start first with tomorrow night's game, the MCG, Melbourne v Brisbane. Melbourne, of course, without Kaziah Pickett for that one game suspension for his hit once more on Jack Soligo. I think that occurred during the second quarter too, when he went up for what he supposedly would call or term as a spoil, but unfortunately collected Soligo high with his elbow, so he'll miss his third suspension in the last 12 months. And for Brisbane as well, they at least broke the monkey in a way too, by getting their first win of the season as well in convincing fashion over North Melbourne in to the tune of 70 points, which Joe Danaher, Eric Kipple and Charlie Cameron found some much-needed form in their midfield as well was clinical. But this is another big test as well for Brisbane against midfield, supreme midfield as well. We saw Christian Petrarca last week have basically a best-on-ground performance once more of 29 disposals and was absolutely supreme right throughout as well. So what do you guys make of this game too as well? Because there seems to be a lot of facets which suit both teams, but there's one particular area which probably both sides can get on if you look in the regards as well. Brisbane's outside run and then Melbourne too with their inside work.
Yeah, this is, for me, this is a game of the round. I actually really liked the game of Judd McVie last week. His intercept game is sort of complementing that Lever, May sort of role extremely well. And now D's had pretty much the best defense the last few years. And you always feel like they're shoring up to be, again, the best defense for this season as well. For Brisbane, it was definitely the hit out they needed against North Melbourne. They cleaned out a lot of cobwebs, got the ball going. Their forward line started to get some synergy through, a bit of form back into them, because once they get their form, we know they are about the most potent there is in the competition. Now, they do have to come up against Melbourne at the MCG, so they get over that MCG hoodoo again. But if it's going to be a really close game, but I can't really see Brisbane getting over the top of the D's of their home deck. But it's going to be a definitely good game to watch.
Ash, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very hard to tip against Melbourne. I think, especially last week, what we've seen is sort of an additional element with sort of their offense and ability to spread and be much more efficient inside 50 than they sort of were a little bit earlier on in the year. And sort of you can just tell the experience which they have against some of the teams that have already played this season, you know, knowing when to go quick, when to go slow. And it's a reflection of a truly elite side. So, you know, even last week, I remember very clearly multiple times, they just had a loose player at the back, create some space and managed to slam a few goals quick. So that's the difference in the game. And I reckon that's going to get them over line against the Lions as well.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting as well too, because we saw last year in round 18, Brisbane basically have a four-goal lead with 7 minutes remaining, and Melbourne pipped them by, I think it was a solitary point, and it was just another incredible comeback. But we've seen Brisbane, at least only a couple of years ago, beat Melbourne that semi-final, which they trailed by 28 points midway in that first half. So they've somehow managed to wrestle some sort of momentum away from the Gabba and at the MCG. But this is just, once more, a brand new season, but also completely a new clean slate for the Lions too. So just be interesting to see how it sort of all plays out for them from the first bounce tomorrow night too. So we'll turn our attention now to the second game, which is under the roof at Docklands between the Western Bulldogs and Essendon. The Bombers, of course, coming off that extremely disappointing loss to Port Adelaide last week, really undid all their hard work after what was a pretty encouraging first 3 weeks of the season. And Western Bulldogs too, well, they gave it everything against Geelong. Tom Liberatore, Marcus Fontenpelly, both those guys absolutely starred right throughout. Absolutely Herculean performances. They almost dragged the Bulldogs over the line, lost to the tune of 4 points, and their ledger currently sits at 2-2. And normally over the years between the Dogs and Essendon, it has been pretty high-scoring games right throughout as well, and probably won't date one of those games back. It was back to 2008, which they combined for about 260 points all up, and there was another game in 2011, which they combined for over 35 goals that night too. But you feel as though it could reach that particular pinnacle as well. We've seen Essendon really bring upon that Essendon edge, which Brad Scott has really emphasised as well, and really bring back that mongrel and toughness too. But whereabouts as well for the Dogs too, with their work and the clearances in which they always seem to excel in when they are winning. And then as for Essendon too, how much more of that defensive transition do they have to stop? Because we spoke about it last week too on the program.
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of game that Essendon really needs to try it. Get close to winning to really show that sort of Essendon toughness they've been trying to talk about the last few weeks. This is like you got an A grade midfield and Bont and Liver who had an, as you said, Herculean effort against last week against the Cats, where like Liver had what 28 contested, 19 clearances. There's no player at Essendon that can sort of compete inside against somebody like that. I mean, they're still a class with merit, but that's more on the outside that you're going to get. And that's the one thing too with Docklands, especially between these two sides, it's like a high transition, but it's also a high possession rate between these two sides. They both will get close to 400 possessions between them. And you'll get a lot of kick around the half-back line before you slingshot through. So it will be, as you said, quite a high-scoring game, I think, and probably low pressure, but high contested early. And that's probably going to be where the Dogs get over the line, because in their clearances, they definitely have edge over Essendon.
Ash, your takeaways, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you guys summarized it well. I'll keep it short. I think Essendon stand no chance.
Okay, so we'll turn our attention now to the first game on the Saturday afternoon between the Giants and the Saints as well, too, down at Marnica Oval. The Giants, of course, undefeated to start the season, and St Kilda, of course, basically finding their way back after that early first half deficit against Richmond to win by 7 points. It sort of feels like the Saints as well this season are trying to play a more quicker brand of footy. It's sort of unusually accustomed for Ross Lyon teams to play at a quicker pace as well, considering they love to sort of create stoppages every time and really keep the ball in one part of the ground. And of course, as we've seen from the Giants this last season a bit, they've gone back to the Giants of old, right? That quickness running through the middle and taking teams on and dominating opposition sides with their leg speed too. Your takeaways as well, especially sort of with the midfields and sort of with St Kilda's backline too, which I think definitely goes under the radar.
Yeah, their back line was the main reason they stayed in the game against Richmond early. That narrowness of the grounds definitely halted St Kilda's sort of ball movement as well as Richmond's. The way it wasn't conducive to probably they're both a number one game styles in a way. But I thought Callum Wilkie's effort, but along with Josh Battle as well, they really controlled the air, especially against an under sort of sized Richmond forward line last week. And they definitely couldn't, I mean, Richmond couldn't stop, couldn't cut it past halfway, couldn't score, especially in their second half. And that really allowed St Kilda to get on their way. But for GWS, though, they just have their forward line for me just has too many targets, too much class that you almost can't stop everyone. One week it's Green, next minute it's Hogan, then it's Daniel. It's just, you have so many options in there that it's just a nightmare for anyone to match up on. And their midfield is just like you got Steele for Saints, but you're up against Green, Whitfield, Kelly, etc. It's just, I think it's just too much class every time. And it's just, St Kilda are clearly on the improve as a side, but GWS are just and one or two levels ahead, I feel. And they're just going to be too hard to beat.
Ash, your opinions on this game?
Yeah, once again, summarised it well. Giants, I believe the average the highest scores. Out of any team in the competition at the moment, 115, which is just crazy when you think about it. So on one hand, you have the really high score of Giants, and the Saints, who have historically been a really low point conceding team. So it's going to be interesting how that matchup goes. What's going to give way? I want to see who gets the job on Jesse Hogan. He's been in some incredible form. It'll be interesting to see whether Battle and Wilkie and whoever can stop him, but. Yeah, I think you've probably just got to give it to the Giants, but I wouldn't rule out the Saints either. I think the Giants may be sort of given a bit of false hope this first sort of month of the season, just seeing the ease of opponents which they've sort of faced so far. So to come across the Saints, it'll be a good challenge and looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think transition too for the Giants has been such a big theme, right, in this past season. And also that West Coast game in round two, it absolutely killed them off turnovers. I think it was about 72 points off turnovers. And that's where they do so much of their damage. And that's where for St Kilda, they have to be super precise with their targets. If they sort of go for a short option in the middle and it doesn't come off, then they'll absolutely be burnt the other way just because the Giants' extreme leg speed right the round two. And they just rarely seem to get tired. I think it's a big thing too with the Giants when you watch them is that they can basically go from first to third to fifth gear within about 6, 7 minutes. And it's scary. And it's sort of the Geelong side of the late 2000s, right, where they can kick four or five goals in a blink of an eye. And the game essentially turns from there. So that's going to be a real watch, I think, for St Kilda too, who, as you've mentioned, Ash, as you've mentioned, Alan, that they prefer to keep it extremely low scoring and wanting to establish stoppages every single time and not allow the Giants to get into their free-flowing game. So it'd be super, so fascinating to see how it all pans out come Saturday afternoon. We'll turn our attention before we head to a break. This game, Carlton v Adelaide, we'll let Ash lead the reins on this one too, under the roof at Marvel Stadium. The last time, I'm pretty sure the Blues sort of, well, the last time Adelaide beat Carlton at Marvel all the way back in 2018 as well. And the Blues beat them in 2021 in round 15, which was under open roof. And of course, the open roof is no longer open due to extra policies that have been inundated as well, they're due to heat as well, and I think players losing sight of the ball under the big ray of sunshine, which sort of happens every now and then in Melbourne too. But it's going to be extremely interesting as well. Matthew Nicks has spoken about the last couple of weeks about sort of trying to build confidence within the group and the players sort of lost for form in a way too, unlike last season, and not quite hitting their targets inside 50. It's now sort of predicated against Melbourne when they only registered four majors from 44 inside 50 entries. And against Melbourne, there were signs here and there, but unfortunately, they kept bombing it straight down Stephen May's throat. I think May took about, what, seven intercept marks on the night too. So there's still issues there going forward, and I think it's going to be a big thing too as well against Carlton's midfield brigade. As all of us know too, they're an extremely well-drilled, contested side, and when they get on top of that and the clearances, unfortunately, that wasn't the case last week against Fremantle, which they lost their count 44-27. But once they do sort of establish that real dominance there, they're extremely hard to stop. We'll allow you to take away sort of your thoughts on this game, Ash, being a Blues supporter.
Yeah, I mean, I see no way how, call me biased, I see no way how Carlton can lose this game. You know what they're going to bring through the middle. You know what they're going to bring with their run and spread. You know that Harry and Charlie are going to kick a bag under the roof. You know Walsh is going to come back and prove all the haters wrong. They should have gone and picked one over Rosie and Butters and all them. So, look, I'm very confident that Carlton win. But I think with Adelaide, you can't really underestimate them either, despite them probably not having the greatest week last week. I think a lot of that probably came from the midfield. I know the Crows fans probably questioning a bit sort of where that dare was, where their excitement was with their ball movement, a bit of competitiveness. That sort of been in the last quarter, but just wasn't there throughout the entire game. It looked a bit vanilla, and it just that the midfield's ability to influence the game is going to be, I reckon, very hard to overcome Carlton's. Just a bit of a lack of class there, I think, and polish just around the ground. When they're transitioning the ball from defence, their chains going forward, getting inside 50, just hasn't been very clean at all. They're often just going for the wrong kicks, and they're not giving their forwards the greatest option. So they need to get a bit creative. They need to try something new. 0-4, it's not looking good, and I fear it's about to be 0-5.
Alan, your sort of thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Ash. I mean, for Adelaide, they've just been, as you said, vanilla. Last year, they were attacking and daring. The moment they are boring, slow, wide. Short chip here, there. They might say that might get to repeat inside 50s, but they're kicking to a contested forward line. There was so many numbers. Like, they got no space. Rankin, if you look at Taylor Walker this year, he's got nowhere to move. And all of a sudden, he's fallen off the cliff, and everyone's saying he probably should retire. They need some dare. You just want them to actually take the game on, because if they don't take the game on, Carlton are going to thrash them, really. And they're going to be 0-5, and they're going to struggle, I have a feeling.
Okay, well, that's sort of going to be a real telling part too, I think, as well with this game. And actually, just to sort of clarify further, Carlton's won the last couple of games against Adelaide under the roof at Marvel Stadium, including was a pretty dominant performance in round eight of 2022 as well, which Cripps ran right in that game, and so many of the other Carlton midfielders did in what was a pretty dominating performance on that day. We'll take a short break here on the AFL show on Mojo Sports, and we'll continue our previews on the other four games on the other side of this. Welcome back, everyone, to the next edition here on the Mojo Sports Network. We've covered through the first four games of round five, with Melbourne v Brisbane kick-starting tomorrow night at the MCG, followed by the Western Bulldogs and Essendon under the roof at Marvel Stadium, followed by the Giants and St Kilda at Manukau Oval, and then Carlton Adelaide, the most recent preview, under the roof at Docklands. So we'll turn our attention to Gold Coast and Hawthorn, the first Saturday night game up in Carrara. The Suns losing to the Giants last week to the tune of 28 points. And as for Hawthorn, well, the first half didn't go to plan. They were trailing by 38 points. And it always seems to be this Hawthorn way, right? After halftime, at least the last two matches, against Geelong included, that they seem to fight back. And whether it's through the contested possession, win their fair share of clearances, we'll sort of really dive into the deep scope of this against the Suns and how much they're able to really produce on that end too. But it's going to be extremely fascinating as well. Who gets a tagging role on Matt Rowe? Do they go with Finn McGuinness once more? Because we saw that he was the sub, I'm pretty sure, in the opening round against Essendon. You think that's most likely the matchup, even up forward as well for the Suns as well, with their threats there too, with Ben King basically rolling around. And just they've got so many options there down forward. And Nick Holman with his pressure, which I think definitely goes so much unnoticed as well, and it's such a big barometer for Gold Coast tackle pressuring inside 50. Malcolm Rose has too chipped in with a couple of goals last week, and he provides so much spark at ground level. And even the midfielders we've already mentioned too, Noah Anderson's so clinical there too. David Swallow can play him off half back or through the middle. Tuke Miller, the skipper there, and then down back with Charlie Ballard and Connor Butterick definitely is another real unheralded small defender too that just seems to get the job done week in, week out. So there's a plethora there for the Suns. And as for the Hawks, well, we've seen those glimpses right the last couple of weeks. It's just how much longer in terms of sustaining can they maintain to really clinch those 4 points, right? And we've seen those promising signs with with through the Hawthorn's young midfield brigade, Jai Newcombe down back as well, James Sicily there too, and up forward as well. Of course, we've mentioned Luke Bruce and Nick Watson still unavailable. Watson for the next 5 weeks, Bruce at least for this clash too. So let's begin first with you, Alan, as well. Just your thoughts as well on Gold Coast and the whole adjustment under Damien Hardwick and how they're able to sort of find their feet, and really for Hawthorn too, just whereabouts do you see sort of their whole continuity with their game plan moving forward?
Yeah, for Gold Coast, Dimmer's been quite brave so far. I think he's trying to fast track this team as quick as possible. We saw last week he made what three debutants come in, and they all held their account very well. Like Sam Cloyce was fantastic in that back sort of pocket role. Ethan Reid showed a bit of class. I mean, sort of been has a bit of a unicorn with his sort of height, but able to get around the ground extremely well. And Will Graham as well, sort of half back, sort of a bit in midfield as well, was quite impressive. But there was the game for me from Mac Andrew that really stood out. That was almost his absolute breakout. He had like 16 intercept possessions or something. Like GWS couldn't get past him. It was almost like a Mac Andrew wall. And normally we're thinking that it's like Ballard, I think it's like Collins, like they're the defensive thing, but he was like Inspector Gadget coming out everywhere. It was actually fantastic by him. But you can definitely see though the talent of that back line. He's definitely trying to build that back line. He's got that midfield there already with Rael, Anderson, Tuukka Miller, like Flanders, like that's almost an A grade midfield already. It's that back line he's trying to implement, because for Richmond, it's like half back line was such a key thing with Hawley, Short, etc. That rebound off quick slingshot movement, that was such a sort of unheralded thing. Part of the we all focus about the forward line being short pressure attacking, but as a half back line was such a key part of his thing. You're starting to see that being developed now for Gold Coast. For Hawthorn, there it's you've got to think that sometimes they're game plan is not the same every week. If you look back a few weeks ago against the D's, they were slow, just kicking around the back line. You didn't know what they were doing. Against Collingwood, it was a bit of the same to say the first half, but then the second half, they're playing quick, ballistic football, getting from the clearances out, which is more akin to what you saw last week. You just want to see some consistency with Hawthorn. You know, they're a young building team, they've got a young talent, and you're not expecting them to get a lot of wins this season, but you just want to see some consistency from week to week. And at the moment, they haven't had that.
So, Ash, what do you think about sort of with Hawthorn too, and sort of how they want to sort of further integrate their game plan too to really building this whole module of consistency? Because we saw the last couple of seasons, they've showed really promising signs along the way too. They dismantled Port Adelaide a couple of years ago to Adelaide Oval to the tune of basically 10 goals. So, we've seen those glimpses here and there from the Hawks. But what do you think, just sort of consistency wise, for them to really bridge that gap?
I think for now, just about getting games into the kids. I think the focus needs to be experience, and needs to be, putting them up against mature bodies. You've already seen Warple sort of start off really well in his career, had a few off years, and now he's back to sort of really true A grade form. Newcombe as well, but then you've also got, Dylan Moore. He's not that young, but he can float through the midfield. Josh Ward, Cam McKenzie. So they've got a lot of talent there. It's all about getting that game time together, figure each other out, mature the bodies. And I've no doubt they've got a lot of talent. It's going to click soon. It's more a matter of when, not if. So I'm not too concerned about them at the moment. In terms of this game, it's probably more the battle of mid, if you want to call it that. In terms of not that great, although the midfield is probably pretty good. I think we talk about the best midfields in the comp and we brush over Gold Coast far too often. Alan summarised it pretty well, Anderson, Miller, Rao, Flanders. So look, we'll see what happens. I think Gold Coast get this one done, but I'm really bullish on Hawks too.
Yeah, Sam Flanders is the name you mentioned there too, Ash, and he was a big part, especially that back end of last season. There was a game against St Kilda, I think he had 33 disposals, and saw one of his real breakout games, and he's just continued that enriching form ever since too, and has definitely molded himself into a real sort of key bronze, if you want to use in some parts as well, to the Gold Coast midfield. We'll switch now to the other Saturday night game at the Adelaide Oval. Fremantle remaining in South Australia for the second consecutive week, and they take on Port Adelaide. We've already mentioned about two particular Port Adelaide midfielders' names in Connor Rozee and Jason Horne-Francis earlier in the podcast as well. But Fremantle will be without Michael Frederick at least for 1 week with a low-grade hamstring strain. And they should get Sean Darcy back as well. He has to complete a main training session for his first game of the season. And I think Nathan O'Driscoll is another potential in as well, who's really shown flashes of his brilliance as well on the wing for the Dockers. Feels though, Alan, you spoke about this a couple of episodes ago with Port Adelaide's clearance game in a forward half territory game, which they excel in, and that sort of real burst from the clearances. And Fremantle also do likewise too. We've seen Andy Brayshaw also play a magnitude of various roles to start this season on the wing or in the coal face. And we've seen Caleb Sarong as well, really. Of course, he's been known as that real clearance extractor anyway, and Hayden Young in there too, and Nat Fyfe as well, relishing back in the midfield confines. Just what do you think about the whole clearance domination as well on a Port Adelaide aspect? And as for Fremantle, which they really excelled in last week against the Blues, winning that count by plus 17.
Because this game's going to be at the Adelaide Oval, the clearances are extremely important because once you get that ball forward, you can really set that game up as Port Adelaide do. They press so high, it almost strangles opposition. They can't get a play, so you get repeat inside 50s so much. That's why Port Adelaide last few seasons, because they press so high, they've always been sort of top two, three in the competition for the time in forward half. Because if they get that clearance domination to start with, once they get it inside 450, it's almost impossible then to transition out. And that's one of the things when I saw when they played against Richmond, for instance, they pressed so high even the MCG that once Richmond was able to get past because of the bit wider ground, I was able to score from more freely because they can get out the back and there was just this open space. Now at the Adelaide Oval, it's a far harder. But the thing is, as you touched on, Fremantle too is still a similar game too, where they try and get most of their game set up from stoppages because they do have a lot of clearance space in Sarong, Fyfe, and Brayshaw. And now with Young playing more midfield time as he's come off the half-back line, his actual full-time sort of midfield role, there is going to be a huge emphasis on this midfield battle between the two sides. And the ones who do win it, it's going to be put their best foot forward to actually win the game. So it's going to be extremely tight and it will be a low-scoring game. But I feel like the damage that Port Adelaide's mids can do in from the clearances will be slightly better than what Fremantle can do. But that back line, though, of Alex Pearce, though, is going to be pivotal for what Fremantle can do in limiting the ability of what I like to score.
Ash, your sort of thoughts on both teams and what they can really use to counteract one another?
Yeah, well, I think Alan, it was you who mentioned that Brisbane versus Melbourne was your game of the round. This is my game of the round, in my opinion. I think it's going to be great, and I think in a way, it sort of foreshadows a bit of Giants versus Saints and the fact that sort of Port are a really high scoring team. And it's going to be interesting how that can sort of carry that on with obviously no Finlayson for those reasons. But, can Dixon, Marshall, Georgiades will be his second game back and they all stand up. But then also, you have guys like Boone Jones and Rioli and Rosé who are really finding ways to kick goals, even though they're not sort of big name goal kickers. So I think a lot of that high scoring power, as you guys mentioned, stems from their midfield and to average 62 inside 50s a game. It's very, very hard to stop that, no matter how good your back line is. So it's going to be interesting against Freo with Liam Ryan and Alex Pearce, who've generally this season been a pretty low score conceding team, whether they can keep that up. And their pressure's been really good. So far, they've reached 64 tackles a game, which is very high. And that back line, as soon as they intercept it, their rebounding is sort of some of the best in the competition. Ace, Sharp, Clark. Even Liam Ryan, they're great attacking defenders. So it's going to be very interesting after the ball's going to be bouncing each way. I feel like it's probably going to be a bit of a high scoring game as well. And good on Freo. So if I don't think many people would have expected this start of the year, especially with some how many players were traded out over the last couple of seasons, so many. But I guess it also brings out your fair share of youngsters. So Josh Tracy's been pretty impressive as it's as been as. Can't speak, as has Jai Amos up forward. Jeremy Sharp has been one I think that not many people expected to have at the start of the year, which he has. So, yeah, this is my game of the round.
Yeah, Jeremy Sharp, as you mentioned, Ash, yeah, he's been a big sort of addition in a way too for the Dockers. And of course, he's known for his elite running, as we saw during the pre-season too, racking up pretty elite times in some of the time trials as well for Fremantle. He's probably won their, if not their best endurance runner too. So it'll be fascinating to see if O'Driscoll does get up as well and how that sort of wing combination does sort of mold together as well. And whether that does mean that Ethan Hughes gets dropped back to the waffle. Well, I guess only time will tell in that particular aspect. We'll turn our attention now to the first of two Sunday games, Geelong and North Melbourne down at GMHBA Stadium, where we've mentioned the Cats are 4-0 for the first time in 7 years. And for the winless Roos, they're somehow trying to look for a win too. Alan, just what do you think as well? Because both midfields are extremely young. I think this is probably the most curious part to this whole match.
Yeah, it is quite strange to think that Geelong, being such an old team, have such a young midfield, but they really do. I mean, Clark's been getting thrown in there. Sometimes he's been really good. Sometimes he's been a bit out of it, but that's what we expect for a young footballer. But he's just been given the opportunity to get CBAs, get their contests, get in the midfield. But the one thing I've been finding really interesting as well is that Geelong has sort of been transitioning their forward line too. So Cameron is playing more up the high half forward, almost hitting the wing kind of thing, like a pseudo old-fashioned sort of Matthew Richardson role on the wing, where he's actually playing up higher forward, kicking swords inside 50, being that transition boy, but he's still getting marks inside 50 as well. So on the weekend against the Dogs, he had what 20 odd touches, had six inside 50s, 12 score involvements. He was by far the reason why Geelong was able to win that game against the Dogs' sort of superior midfield through Bibber and Bont. But the element of that is because Cameron's up higher, they're giving the likes of how was it? Dempsey, yeah, given the likes of Dempsey and Henry more opportunity forward and play deeper, and they're starting to actually flourish. And you've seen Dempsey play a couple of really good games in his early career. But for the North, their midfield is the element that they have really strong at the moment, and their forward line's able to score. But when they don't win that ball in the midfield, their defence is just lacking at the moment. Like their transition rate from for opposition to go from their forward 50, from their defensive 50 to attacking against them is 18th in the competition. They just can't set up the ground at all. And they losing Ben McKay, it's huge for them. And I don't think it's really been talked about enough that they're just losing that one big key defender. And all of a sudden, that whole back line is now just falling apart. We thought that was great to start with, but they're just really struggling. So if they don't win that midfield there, they just leave themselves open so much to score. And you're going to see down at GBHVA quite a high scoring game, and they're not going to be able to transition the ball against that strong Geelong defence.
Ash, you want to add anything to it?
Yeah, I'll keep it short. Geelong by 150.
Jeez, well, we hope we don't see a 186-point win. What happened back around 2011 when Melbourne played down there? And of course, that was the demise of Melbourne for at least the best part of 2.5 seasons. So I think last season as well, Geelong won pretty comprehensively too. It was back in round 17 and sort of GMHBA Stadium or slash Cadinia Park or slash Simmons Stadium hasn't been a happy hunting ground every time North have travelled down there too. I think there was probably optimism from last Friday's game against Brisbane was Charlie Combin. Of course, in December, he was interviewed about his new role down back and he severely hurt his ankle against Melbourne back in round 7. It was a pretty lengthy rehabilitation process to get his ankle right. I think it was a broken leg or broken ankle, one of those two. And he definitely was one of North's best players last Friday and will have a big role to play on either Jeremy Cameron or Tom Hawkins. We'll now get to the eighth and final game of round 5, which ends between West Coast and Richmond at Optus Stadium. The Tigers have, well, they've been dominant at Optus Stadium for at least the last couple of matchups as well. One in round 18 last season, of course, round 7, 2022, which they demolished West Coast to, I think it was about the tune of 109 points on that Friday night. So they've definitely had sort of the bragging rights in the last couple of games. And well, it was by far one of most West Coast's competitive performances, really pushing Sydney, although they end up losing by 26 points. So at least some more encouraging signs in terms of their pressure too. And the Tigers, well, they were pretty unlucky, you could say as well, to lose to St Kilda after holding what was the best part of a 22-point lead at halftime and ultimately losing by 7 points. Alan, your Tigers will take it away with you.
Yeah, this game is going to be, I think, marketed purely in the fact that it's Harley Reid versus Dustin Martin. And I think we can all get around it. So far, Harley Reid's been slowly coming into it, but the last couple of weeks, he's really taken, I think, AFL by storm. Already, he's leading the competition with, what, broken tackles more than anyone else. So, as an 18, 19-year-old kid, he's just a beast and can't be tackled, which is great to see. And I think, no doubt, he wants to get one on Dusty. In the midfield sometime, but for Richmond, this is a game they desperately need to win. They've been really competitive for large periods of games, but haven't had the composure or the ability to put the score on the board to actually get the win. Like against St Kilda, they had the dominance in the field, complete dominance in the first half, but only managed to get 4 goals on the board. And then when they had the win in this last quarter, then repeat inside 50s, but still they couldn't get the score against West Coast. Still have a decent defence with Brass and McGovern, who've both been fantastic so far this year. You would expect them to get to be too strong for West Coast, but on the West Coast flip side, this is a game they're probably penciling as their best chance to win, especially the first bit of the season, especially with Richmond's quite a large injury list, etc., and at the home deck. So this will be a lot closer game than probably a lot of people will think, and one that's going to be quite interesting to watch. But I would like to see how sort of West Coast youngsters really take it up to Richmond. I mean, all the flip sides of Richmond youngsters too. It's because they're starting to really sort of blossom into their foot force in their forward half. that young sort of half forward line is really starting to gel quite well. And that pressure game we saw against Sydney, but their consistency is still not there yet. So it's going to be quite a good game to watch, and it should be quite close.
Ash, your final thoughts?
Yeah, my final thoughts is what a snooze fest. sorry, Alan, I'm silently hoping that West Coast win this game, but no, I'm sorry. No, it should be good. It's I'm getting used to the West Coast having the graveyard shift, and I think there will be a bit of a staple to close out the rounds in 2024. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to be a real sort of fascinating part as well, too, with West Coast and the whole tackling pressure. That's all been really harped upon week in, week out by Coach Adam Simpson. And we saw that a lot more in spades against the Swans last Saturday, too. Now it comes a bigger part, too, with Richmond. And we've seen already, even through the first 4 rounds of this season with Adam Uzay, that the pressure's been there. It's just been more about the execution, as Alan's absolutely nailed on the head, too. That's been sort of the difference between them gaining the 4 points and not coming away with the 4 points. So that's going to be an extremely fascinating part to tell. But what has been pretty evident, though, in the last two trips to Optus Stadium is, yeah, just that manic Tiger pressure, which has completely overwhelmed the Eagles. And that's going to be one to sort of really watch out for from the first 5 to 10 minutes, should I say, of the contest. Well, that'll do it here for the latest episode here on the AFL show, previewing round five and all the latest talking points as well from round four, too. Some of the particular notable talking points as well, including Jason Horne-Francis and Connor Rozee's dominant performance over Essendon. You can catch up on all our socials as well, Mojo Sports on Facebook, also on Twitter too, also on Instagram as well. Give us a like and also give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify too, where you can find all our various other sporting shows, including the NBA show, the NRL show, which is well and truly in full swing. So look forward to everyone catching up next week as well. Enjoy the footy, and thank you, Ash and Alan, for joining us on the program this evening.
Yeah, thanks, Yuri. Looking forward to this week's games.
Thanks, Yuri.